You're listening to the EWN Podcast Network.
Welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl, a community and education platform that empowers parents and caretakers to foster independence, leadership, and strong personal identity in girls so they can change the world. Now, here is the founder and your host, Maria Fuller.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Raising a Powerful Girl. I am the founder and your host, Maria Fuller. Before we get started, let's make sure you know where to find me. You can find more information about our education and community platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Instagram at Raising a Powerful Girl. Make sure to connect with us on social media to find out our latest news, learn tips and tricks, submit your questions, and continue our enlightening conversations. And now, let's get on with today's show. Some of the core values of Raising a Powerful Girl are to foster independence and leadership in girls so that they can be the change that we need to see in this world. Yet, learning how to empower girls to be independent and leaders is not as easy as you think. My guest today is Margaret Ruff. Margaret has years of experience as an educator and leadership coach, providing clients with executive leadership development in business and educational professional programs. She's a graduate of the Institute of Professional Excellence in Coaching and certified by Minds at Work as an Immunity to Change coach, providing one-to-one executive coaching, group leadership coaching, and workshops to small and large groups. Margaret's also a certified member of the International Coach Federation and currently the president-elect of the Connecticut chapter. Margaret is a certified Connecticut teacher and administrator and a graduate of the Administrator Preparation Program and Executive Leadership Program from the NEAG School of Education, the University of Connecticut. Based in Fairfield, Connecticut, Margaret is an avid supporter of her community and schools where she serves as the PTA president at her local middle school. She believes that parents need to provide the framework for children to learn and grow through challenges, but step back and manage their own expectations and worries so that those concerns don't transfer to the child. As the child becomes a teenager, it's natural and important for them to try things on their own. And if parents are too involved, it's difficult for the child to develop decision-making skills, independence, and find their own interests and passions. The risk is a young girl disempowered by going into early adult years doing and being what others say she should be and not finding out their strides early on who they want to be. All right. Well, welcome, Margaret. It's so great to have you. So I'd love for you to tell our audience a little bit about you. I know that you have been a K through 5 educator, and you also have some executive leadership training from UConn. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I started my career as a teacher before. I'm currently now an executive leadership coach with my own coaching practice, but in my early career, I started as a classroom teacher. I was a fifth grade teacher in New York City in the public school system. And then I went on to first grade in suburban Connecticut. And then really accelerated in my career and became a school administrator right away, right out of the classroom, just a few years. And so I worked as an assistant principal and then stayed home to raise my own family. And in that journey, I decided I wanted more, so I went back to school and became an executive leadership and trained in the school superintendency. That actually parlayed to where I am today as an executive coach.
Awesome. So we connected a little bit before our call. You said something that was really interesting to me. You said that we often know how to love and care for our children, but sometimes love turns into worry and overthinking and trying too hard. And I can so relate to that. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah. You know, it's just that you think we have such great intentions all the time. Yeah, it's funny. I'm even kind of going through something like that right now as I'm preparing my son for his college journey. And I'm, you know, overthinking, you know, am I helping enough? Am I doing enough? And I realize that the best part of empowering our kids is really the letting go process. And so we can worry a little too much and it's in the best interest of our kids, but the worry can step on their growing path.
Yeah, I totally see that. So talk to me a little bit about letting go, right? Because, you know, myself, even with my own girls, I've seen them go through transitional stages where, you know, even when they're a toddler, you kind of at the beginning are kind of hovering over them, especially, you know, your first one, your first time parent, and you don't want them to fall and you don't want them to get hurt. And then you have your second baby. If you have your second baby and you realize, you know, you loosen up a little bit more and you realize, you know, when they have that first big, you know, spill and how it's so traumatic for us. And usually, you know, they walk away pretty well, but that's all the beginning of learning to let go, right? Like we need to learn to start letting go at a really young age. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, it's actually, I think, you know, but I think brought it all the way back to early childhood because it's a series of letting go of, you know, of stages, I guess, of letting go. I think it comes down to we have to stay in touch with ourselves and we continue to work on, you know, our own self-leadership or our own self-development while our kids are developing. And that's the letting go. I think when I'm talking about letting go, it's kind of back to before the overthinking and the worry. It's natural to be concerned about anything that could happen, good and not good, but that letting go just means trust, you know, that trust that you're doing what you need to be doing, that you have partners or family members who are also there. You're not the only one, you know, and we really aren't totally alone in this. The schools, you know, are there, the pediatricians there, the community, the neighborhood. And when you really can see how many people, including your best friends who, you know, I know in young lives, there tends to be like play groups or just family groups that get together. And we have to also let other people take care of our kids. And that's part of the letting go process.
Right. I love that you talk about that. And I think what's also really important is this idea of community, right? When you start to think about your parenting coming from other sources other than just your own, then you really start creating this sense of community. So parenting can come from yourself as a parent or grandparents or, you know, your schools and your school administrators are also helping you on your parenting journey. They're helping to kind of parent your child. And, you know, even your friends, you know, when I'm with my friends and their children, you know, we have a comfort level with each other that if we see one of our anyone else's child doing something or making a choice that might not be a good choice, we're okay with kind of, you know, guiding them on that, saying, you know, is that a good choice that you're making? You know, what do you think mommy would say about that? And when you start looking at parenting from that sense, it doesn't seem as scary or as lonely.
Right.
It starts to decrease some of that worrying that we constantly have.
That's right. And then the other side of it is the trust part of entrusting in your own intuition or your own, you know, you have your own radar. You know your child better than anyone else does. Although other people do know our children.
Yeah.
Well, and especially like in school situations where kids are there most of the day, every day. But that trusting your own judgment too, you know, I think it really gets tricky when you start, for example, if you're a working parent and you're bringing your child to childcare or you're employing a nanny or any of those other care, you know, and support people that are in your life, that going with your gut and how do you resonate with the person and how do you feel that that person connects with you? And, you know, are you feeling like your child feels safe or empowered around the other caregiver? And I think those are, you know, so we also have, we can, you know, there could be, like I was saying before, overthinking, maybe over worrying, but then there's this other side of us, which we really, as I think moms and dads have this, you know, your child. And that it's important to also listen to your own thinking and feeling.
Yeah. And I think when you, what you're describing to me is, you know, coming into tune with your own intuition and to what feels right to you and, you know, what aligns with your family morals and values. You're talking about leadership skills and you say something that I really love. It's leading your children requires developing the leader in you and that and how you overcome, you know, your worries about your child's future. And I really love that because I think that we really need to see ourselves as leaders of our children. Can you talk about that some?
Yeah, you know, part of that comes from my own development as a life leadership coach. You know, in my own training, I even evolved in my own personal leadership and self-leadership by being coached and by coaching. This idea of self-leadership, meaning, you know, are you aware? Are you clear? Are you, you know, having goals and aspirations for yourself? Are you owning when you're not always right or your part in something that could become a struggle, even if it's a power struggle, like what shoes to wear. You know, is it that important sometimes? You know, for example, something like that. You know, someone wants to wear, you know, a different pair of sneakers than you think are the best one. And that's the letting go, but also owning, you know, maybe you want them to wear the sneakers that you just bought or because they were really expensive or something.
Yeah, I love that because I really feel like that's one of the big things that I preach all the time is this concept of just let your child dress themselves. And, you know, for me, it was about checking myself, checking my emotions. When they picked something out and I looked and I was like, oh, and I got that feeling in my chest. And I was like, well, that's not what I would wear. And I would have to literally like talk to myself in my head, well, why are you feeling this way? Is this because it's really inappropriate or is it because I'm worried about people saying something? And in that sense, I'm hovering a little too much, right? Like I'm really trying to protect her where what I really need to do is allow her to make her own choices that, you know, my experience of maybe I had a bad experience with something that I wore doesn't mean that she's necessarily going to have that experience. And, you know, for me to be able to recognize that and see that and say, this is my feeling, what's on me, this is not what I need to put onto her, is making me more of a leader.
That's right.
By acknowledging that.
Well, and then the other thing too, as a leader, you help someone that you're trying to develop make good choices. And so, for example, I'm thinking of something like, you know, you're not going to have your child wear whatever they want. Like they're not going to wear boots when they're going to the pool. So, but you may also not want them to wear flip-flops because they're not the safest shoe. So when you go shopping for the pool shoes, you give them a few choices, you know, but you have in your mind what would be safer. And then show them, you know, we have these four choices and they're, you know, they're closed back. They're, you know, they're the right kind of shoes for the pool. They're water shoes, but a few different choices. And then the child can choose from those as opposed from just a total free choice, which, you know, in some conditions are not appropriate, or vice versa, like flip-flops in the snow, you know, but because children want to express themselves and want to wear what they want, but we also have the role of safety provider, and, you know, so everything within reason, but it's just that these children still could be making choices. It's just that we can guide them.
Right. And get a little creative sometimes with it, right?
Absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah, I totally see that. Being a former educator, you know, I think that we're definitely seeing in society today this almost epidemic of parents being overly involved with like the scholastics of a child, right? Like even from an early age, you know, the making sure constantly the homework is done, checking it, helping them with projects. If they don't get a good grade, you see them coming in to talk to the teachers. And for me, it's such a strange phenomenon because I don't remember my parents really ever asking me about homework or asking the question. And, you know, it's not something I really do with my daughters either. And part of it is because of their school system and the way that they are empowered to do their own work. And what we're finding are these kids are getting to college and they can almost like not even fully function without the help of the parents because the parents haven't let go. How about that child that, you know, maybe hasn't found the passion for learning yet, right? You know, they're a middle schooler, you know, middle school is a really tough time developmentally for a child with everything that they're going through, especially girls. And she's just not motivated to do her schoolwork, right? Mm-hmm. And she's not really passionate about it. And you don't really want her to fail a class because it's not good. But how long do you push? And to what point do you let her suffer some of the consequences for not turning in an assignment or not doing the project? Because, you know, for me, my fear is I want to help her to learn the skills to be responsible and to plan time and to do her projects and work. But I don't want to be doing that forever. I feel like she needs some type of still self-motivation to do it herself.
Yeah. I think as the parent checking in on their emotional, you know, kind of intelligence around it or their emotional reaction. You know, you're not going to set up for failure, but when you know they can do it because they can handle it and you've seen the work done before, and or you're pretty sure that they have the skills to do the work that's being asked for them, that's when you can let it go a little bit. So then they will find out if they don't hand something in or if they don't get it complete, that their grade will show that. And then the self-motivation may come up. The other side of it, though, is to be really thoughtful and cognizant of the fact that there may be a skill concern that needs some attention. And that's where it's really important to have the bridge relationship between the school or any kind of program or sport coach and the child. So you have a relationship with the adults in your children's life, too. So you can ask those questions. So something like, instead of the assumption that people are thinking that the child's not doing well, asking good questions like, what are you seeing at school? Because I'm seeing homework's not getting done. Or I just want to check in because I have some concerns about motivation at home. I'm noticing that every day my daughter doesn't want to do homework. And I'm getting concerned she'll fall behind. The school may say, well, we haven't noticed that at all, but maybe you can try something. Or sometimes you find out the school is concerned too. And then they say, well, maybe we could try, you know, an extra health check-in. Or, you know, have you considered a tutor or something like that? There could be a skill issue when there's missing motivation. Could also be developmental. An attitude and pushback as tweens and teens grow is actually somewhat healthy because it's showing that they're finding their independence from all the attention that, you know, they may need when they're in early childhood. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally does. And you gave some really great tips. And I think it's, you know, the message is definitely, you know, we really need to have communication, constant communication with, you know, the educators that we have. And if something's not working there, or it doesn't feel right, yeah, you know, go to the next level. And, but we continuously have to be that advocate.
Yes.
You know, for yeah, them. Their leader is what we
absolutely
need to be.
And you know, in my experience on both sides of this as an educator and as a parent, always finding, so when I was in the position, I only wanted to help. I didn't always have all the answers. I wanted to be helpful. And I find that in my life as a parent, the schools always want to help. And what happens is if you're feeling frustration, it's because of something you're not feeling good about, or you're not feeling, and I mean like feeling like, do I have the answers? Or what if I didn't do enough? And that's back to the earlier part of the conversation. I'm worrying too much. And then the other side of it is the not being involved at all. So I've worked in parent leadership at the middle school level, and it was wonderful where there were many parents who were very involved. And at the same time, it was noticeable the difference between parent involvement in the K-5 programs and then in middle school through high school. I think in high school, it's a little more natural for parents to just release their kids and to make their own decisions and things like that. But in the middle school, it's such an important time. And so I encourage parents of tweens to really, you know, do whatever they find, you know, that they're interested in to connect with the schools at that time and kind of support the transition from early childhood and school age to high school. And that in-between time, that middle school time, it's a great time for parents to support schools. And kids, you know, you're not going to go to their classroom so much. But I've always found that the children love seeing their parents in the school setting.
Yeah, definitely. So you said something, building your own leadership in your life, your career, whether you're a stay-at-home parent, self-employed, or an employee, by building your own confidence and leadership capacity, you're setting a role model, but also evolving your own skills to lead your child into adulthood. I love that because I talk so much about modeling behavior. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah, I just feel, and I feel I'm an example of this, is that while raising a family, it, of course, and particularly when you're staying at home to raise a family, and that becomes the thing that you spend most of your time in your work or family, is that what you're, that's what you're doing. And then for working families, you're balancing the work and life balance all the time. Not to say that staying home isn't work-life balance, because it actually is. There's a lot that goes into what the experience of staying at home is. But what I found was that I was really thinking about, what about what's life going to look like when I have, you know, essentially transitioned to, for example, the empty nest, you know? So when my family's off at college and here I am, it's with me and young and wanting to do something with my life. And that is really important to be thinking about, you know, not so much about, you know, what do I want to do whenever I want kind of thing, but more, who am I? And what do I want to contribute and give back or build on? And you're seeing a lot of women, particularly, building businesses, which is awesome. And, you know, we have the opportunity to be entrepreneurs and or go back to work. And that we are somewhat limitless, even though it feels so hard sometimes, you know, to get a job or to find the right, you know, niche in your business or whatever. But it's worth it to focus on that and to find yourself in that process.
Yeah. And, you know, if being an entrepreneur doesn't work for you going back to work, you know, maybe you're going through that transition period where you might be at home with, you know, multiple little ones, you know, getting involved with your church or your community or finding a foundation that you love or the PTA and modeling that leadership behavior for your daughter to see, well, yeah, mom's at home with me, but mom also does this and this and that. And she does it because she loves it. And she does it because it's important. It's so important because our girls need to be surrounded by strong women leaders. And one of the first ones she's going to meet or learn is her own mother.
Right.
It's so important. So important. So, you know, one of my big missions is to help empower parents to help raise their daughters to be leaders. And we haven't even described yet or talked about what a leader is. What is a leader?
For me, a leader is one who influences by things like, you know, your example, their own self-awareness, their capacity to change, to see where they may have impacted, right or wrong, but they may have impacted something and that they can take responsibility. So I think leadership is personal responsibility. And also being aware of how significant your impact is and can be, that you're influencing people all the time. When you're leading yourself and you're taking steps and making moves in your life or business or work that keep you on a performance path, or, you know, where you're constantly evolving to be your best, better self, you know, that people get a chance to learn from you. And so the other thing is that leaders are learners.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, one big thing, and it's something I've kind of talked about with my own daughters, is that we can have really good leaders, but we can also have bad leaders. Like, there are some bad leaders out there, and it happens, you know, in childhood settings. And, you know, my girls are 5.5 years apart, so I'm always kind of saying to my oldest, Alexa, because my youngest, you know, idolizes her, right? And I say, Alexa, you're her leader. And so when she's doing something or saying something, or her sister does an action or repeats an action that, you know, doesn't really align with our values or what I believe in, I'll say to her, you know, she's following you because you're her leader. Mm-hmm. Is this the type of leader you want to be? Is this what she should be doing? Is this how you want to lead her? And when I put it that way to her, instead of saying, stop doing that, you're teaching your sister bad habits, I'm saying, you're leading her. Is this how you want to lead her? She kind of the first time looked at me and didn't understand it. And we talked a little bit more about how you have in front of you this possibility of influencing someone else's life by your behavior. Yeah. And she's in a Montessori setting, which is a mixed age classroom, right? So you have, you know, she's in a third grader this year. So she's a leader in her class because she has first and second years under her. And they talk about that leadership and being a role model to the other children, you know, to make those good choices because your eyes are always following. And, you know, when you're in situations with friends where maybe you'll get one child that maybe will say something not so nice to another child, and all of a sudden you'll start to see them kind of follow.
Yes.
You have the opportunity there to say this isn't right and also be a leader and change the cycle.
That's right.
What are some ways we can empower our daughters to do that more? Because I know it's so hard sometimes to be that leader that goes against what everyone else is doing, but it's so important and so necessary.
I think one of the things you described, which was the modeling at home, where you're saying, you know, is that the leader you want to be, or is that how you want to show up? That, you know, the exercises or the things that you do at home where you know, like you were saying before, everyone does have different values. And so we don't necessarily go into the public world and, you know, impose, you know, particular personal values on people. But if your value is kindness, and if you value friendliness or friendship, or, you know, and those models, that then the child may naturally do that, even in a, let's say, I mean, what you're describing sound maybe like a bullying situation or something like that, or just a negative situation, and that they have the voice because they have it at home, that they have it in their other settings or social settings to feel strong enough or supported enough to say, you know, this isn't right. And this, again, is where schools come in too. I think schools are doing a really great job, and the best that they can in general, right, to teach these things so that, you know, teach what it looks like to have a voice, or what does it look like to be disrespectful, or, you know, what does it look like to be respectful? What is bullying? And then many things that are on the agenda of, you know, helping our young people grow up to be kinder people. And so I think part of it is back, like you said earlier, about being at home. It's partly how you talk to one another, how child is able to express what's happening in their world. And I think also listening, you know, that sometimes people offend just by their words without knowing that they did. And so when we hear our children say someone offended them, it's fair to question and ask. Ask the teacher, ask the child's parent if you know them. If you don't know them, you know, you may find out whether or not this is a right playmate for the child, you know, things like that. But you're certainly asking questions. And so your child feels heard. And when your child feels heard, their voice, you know, is more empowered.
Yeah. And I love that. That brings up, you know, one of my beliefs is to raise a powerful girl, you need to live with one. And what that means to me is that you need to let your daughter get angry with you if she gets angry, but still having respect and boundaries, right? Yeah. There's certain ways that she can be angry with you, that she can disagree with you, that you can have conversations where you don't agree. And I think these are such hard things to do as parents, but I think it's so important that we allow them to feel those things and to verbalize that back to us, because then they're more likely to verbalize that when they're in similar situations in the public where they can be standing up for a friend or standing up for themselves.
I agree with you. Yeah. And the whole idea of, you know, as an adult, you often hear, well, we will agree to disagree. And then he's like, okay with that. And to teach that skill. And also then the other part of that is a young girl and woman finding out that, you know, that it's okay to disagree, that they have an opinion, and that their opinion counts, and it may not be the same as yours, but that it counts. And so, like you said, also then going into the public, having somewhat of an opinion about if they think someone's been wronged and they want to say something.
Yeah. And that just because you don't agree with someone on your beliefs doesn't mean that that terminates a relationship, right? Like, I feel like girls are living with, and I think we're really trying hard as a society to break away from this perfectionism, from this people pleasing pattern. And when we don't stand up and say, I'm sorry, but I don't agree with you on that in a business meeting, you know, with a professor, with a teacher, and, you know, with a parent, girls, I think, are afraid that if they don't agree or they go against the norm, they're not going to be loved anymore, right? And this idea of wanting to make everybody happy. And yeah. I think modeling that behavior at home, because, you know, unconditionally love our children, and showing, you know, I don't agree with you on this. I still love you. I just don't agree with you.
Right.
Such an important lesson to be teaching them.
Absolutely. And that also teaching them that everyone has a different view or perspective on things, whether it's from experience or as parents, we sometimes, we know we've had plenty of experience with some of the things that we see are happening. And so our opinion is coming from an adult perspective, and a child's opinion is new and or the first time, or just the way they see it. And they want to tell you that, but that, the point being about allowing ourselves and our children to have their own viewpoints. And the same true on our side of it as parents to, you know, express when a family value has been breached, or express when, you know, an unacceptable, unkind behavior is showing up, right? So that they get a picture of what it looks like.
Yeah, I love that. Well, thank you so much, Margaret. It was so great to have you. I hope our listeners found this topic enlightening and have picked up some new ideas, insights, and tips along the way. To find out more about Margaret, you can find her at margaretruff.com. To hear the rest of this interview as we further explore this topic, as well as dive into the teenage years, drinking, alcohol, and going away to college, please join our community at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. We look forward to seeing you there.
You are a leader and a role model to developing girls. Whether you're raising a daughter or you work with girls on a daily basis, you see the incredible potential they have to make a difference in this world. You know the change we need is going to come from them, and you want to make sure they grow up to be independent leaders with a strong sense of personal identity, because these are the traits that make a powerful girl. So come join our community and education platform at raisingapowerfulgirl.com. And become a part of our movement to educate, inspire, and cultivate a generation of powerful girls with eye-opening discussions and facts, exercises, and tangible calls to action. We can't wait to see you there.
Have you ever asked yourself this question? Why is it so hard to make a buck? I know I have. Hi, I'm Sandra Yancey, founder and CEO of eWomen Network. What I have discovered after going from the brink of bankruptcy to running a multi-million dollar award-winning business is this. You can't build a million-dollar dream hanging around minimum wage mindsets. My mission is 1 million women entrepreneurs generating $1 million in annual revenue. So here's what I've done. I've created the mother of all entrepreneur success programs that you can access online on your time. It's called Monetize Me Now. It's a 7-module online course that is 100% my success formula, covering mindset, mission, management, motivation, marketing, and measure. Come on, take my hand and I'll show you the way to learn to earn flowing revenue for your business. Visit monetizemenow.com for details.
Thanks for joining us. This is the EWN Podcast Network.